It says that after the prophet Moses, he came and he presented all of these miracles to the Pharaoh. And the Pharaoh saw them. He rejected them, meaning he rejected this truth that he had come to assert, even though he was certain about it. He was certain that the prophet Moses was a prophet and had been sent by God and with these, you know, manifest proofs to, you know, for the guidance, for his guidance, but he rejected them because accepting them would be tantamount to his abdicating his sovereignty and his power, which is something that he wasn't willing to do. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at accepting the truth in the words of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Aqa for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, it is the beginning of a new year in many parts of the world, but with a continuation of the same old ways. This as the Zionist genocide against Palestinians is in its 87th day, and the collective West continues its support for or silence on the slaughtering of the people in Gaza. And the resistance continues with its unwavering fight. We're going to look at all of this on the Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, Anthony Hull, Professor of Globalization out of Lethbridge University. And Christopher Helali, researcher and political analyst out of Vermont. Thank you both for being with me. Well, let's start it off with Anthony. Anthony, we're getting close now to 3 months of this genocide. Do you think that the world believes that the Israeli onslaught could not have been stopped if the Western regimes had wanted to stop it?
Well, the Western regimes are in disharmony with their own people. And that is becoming very clear that the resistance is deep and profound and significant in the West, but the governments are so tied into the Zionist network that we're not seeing action. But who we are seeing action from is, do we call them the Houthis, now the Yemeni, because they're taking charge of the Yemeni government, the Ansar Allah, the people in the Red Sea, and the South Africans, the Yemenis and the South Africans have taken major steps. The genocide, the charge in the International Court of Justice, with South Africa bringing the charge of genocide directly on Israel. This is big. This is genocide we're talking about. Of course, Israel talks a great deal about the genocide it has suffered. Now it is imposing a genocide. And it is being taken to task by the United Nations court. And that is big. And of course, the Yemeni people, especially the Houthi element of Yemen, have broken open the whole question of navigation in the Red Sea by taking a simple principled position. You're trying to starve, you're trying to dehydrate, you're trying to kill en masse. You're trying to carpet bomb the people of Gaza, that this is intolerable. And so any boat going by the Yemen region that has some connection to Israel will be stopped. And now we've seen to the point where four Houthi boats trying to impose their view of justice on a Mansaik liner, a container ship, that resulted in U.S. helicopters killing 10 Houthis in three boats. That is an act of war. So now the Red Sea is thoroughly in a conflagration of sorts, with an act of war having taken place. Of course, the Houthis were trying to stop that boat. We don't know exactly what the connection is with Israel, but we can be sure that they did the research. And now this creates a major problem for
Stay with me. Let me get Christopher in on this discussion. I'll come back to that train of thought. Well, Christopher, would you say that 2023 was the year that reality has come into focus and that the so-called democratic principles used by these Western regimes were exposed for the so-called, for what they really are, tools to destabilize and control various countries and movements in the world?
Absolutely. First of all, Happy New Year to your viewers.
Same to
you. And you're absolutely correct. What we are witnessing is the total hypocrisy and bankruptcy of these so-called Western liberal values that they have imposed at the end of the barrel of the gun for the past 30-plus years since the collapse of the Soviet Union and the end of the Cold War. The United States and its international partners and its military arm and wing, which is NATO, have imposed brutal regime change operations around the world, imposing their will and trying to remake the world in their image. And of course, that type of baptism comes by fire, and it comes with the deaths of millions, not only as we're seeing today in Gaza with the genocide of the Palestinians, but also we remember the Iraqis, the Syrians, the Afghans, the Ukrainians in Europe, the Serbians who were under the bombardment of NATO, the Libyans. So, of course, it's important for us to understand that 2023 was a year where the mask came off fully. Why? Because now we have a multi-frontal war on multiple continents. We see in Ukraine the ongoing escalation by Western countries against the Russian Federation. In Gaza, in the Middle East, we see what's going on with the Zionist regime's genocide against the Palestinian people. Now we see the struggle in the Sahel, Latin America, the Pacific region, of course. So 2023 has been a year where there has been massive confrontation of the imperialist system against those forces that seek to throw off the yoke of colonialism and imperialism. So I think it's a year for the history books. I think 2024 will definitely be the first year of greater liberation and greater multipolarity as we enter a new world order.
Well, Anthony, you were talking about Yemen, and I want to look at that because, of course, at the end of the year, we witnessed the U.S. attacking Yemeni boats, as you had talked to. And, of course, they were trying to enforce a blockade on ships going to and from the Israeli regime due to its continued genocide on Palestinians. So Washington killed 10 Yemeni naval forces. Let's put this in perspective. What exactly does it mean? So the U.S. tries to stop the Yemenis who are trying to stop the genocide, but it doesn't stop Israel, which is actually committing the genocide.
Yes, and it raises the issue that to stop this very serious disruption of transport through the Red Sea, all it would take would be for the Israel and the United States to say, well, we don't want to kill any more Palestinians. We don't want to do genocide anywhere. We don't want to do carpet bombing, mass murder, starvation. So if we stop doing that, that eliminates the problem, and it would eliminate the problem. But you talk about unmasking, and a lot of unmasking has taken place, but there is a lot of unmasking yet to do. For instance, over the weekend, I was looking deeply into the fact that Netanyahu has a very old, deep partnership with Hamas, that he has elevated the role of Hamas because he wants to keep Gaza separate from the West Bank. He doesn't want to have a unified Palestinian group who would conduct a negotiation on the two states. So he has exploited this relationship to make himself look like a strong leader against Islamic terrorism, at the same time while building up the Hamas group? And are they still working together? Because this is you know, very serious. It's well documented in Haaretz and other places. So this unmasking of what is really going on, how much game playing is in Netanyahu's position, where after all he needs this war to stay out of jail. His dream has been war with Iran, which he may try to you know, develop through this Red Sea situation. It's a long way to go before we unmask what is really going on.
Okay. Christopher, your take on that, because there are some analysts who talked about that, but in reality, what we see on the ground and Hamas and the sacrifices that are major in what's going on, your overall analysis of what Anthony said?
I think that, of course, there are many reports throughout the past years and decades about the relationship of Hamas with the Zionist regime, the Muslim Brotherhood, questions about various Palestinian factions over the course of the previous decades. And we're talking going back to the civil war in Lebanon, the fights between the Marxist-Leninists and communists and various Islamist groups. I think that, of course, history, of course, is complex with many different and changing positions and sides. That was very evident during the Lebanese civil war and afterwards within the Palestinian factions. I think today, that after October 7th, a lot of that history is no longer at play because Hamas has taken the central role in the axis of resistance. They are giving thousands of martyrs against the Zionist regime's genocide. They have allied themselves in military formation with other groups, including the PFLP, the DFLP, and other Islamic Jihad and other militant groups on all the political spectrum. And I think it's important to recognize today that whatever cooperation might have existed that was being referenced by Anthony there, I don't think it no longer is there. Certainly there is a claim to say that Netanyahu is using everything that happened on October 7th to justify this ongoing genocide, to justify what is the plan by Smotrich and others in the government to ethnically cleanse the land of Gaza, to kick out all the Palestinians or to leave a small amount of Palestinians there. And of course, we recognize that Netanyahu was, his government was ready to collapse and he is under bribery and corruption charges. So of course, as it was rightly pointed out by my colleague, that this is also an effort to keep Netanyahu's job safe for now. As long as the war goes on, Netanyahu will be in power. Once the day after the war ends, Netanyahu will be out and might be in a jail cell because the public in Israel is very much against him and what he's done. His ratings have plummeted. So I think that it's very complex to look at that, but certainly Hamas is taking a leading role in the axis of resistance today, regardless of the history that might be in the past.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Anthony, you talked about the U.S.'s responsibility also for this Zionist genocide. How does Washington benefit from the slaughtering of Palestinian children?
Well, that's the question the world is asking right now. Washington has benefited from having an outpost in the Arab world, as did the British Empire, setting up you know, a Jewish homeland at the mouth of the Suez Canal, this imperial project then being taken over by the United States, the United States treating Israel as a kind of outpost and building up Israel. Now with the concept of a greater Israel, the Likud vision, the Jabotinsky vision of a larger Israel from the Nile to the Euphrates, that this has been U.S. policy all along. But now the United States is looking like, you know, you've got to deal with the fact that in the West Asia, it is Arab speaking, and having this little Western outpost of European Jews to do the bidding of the old Anglo-American Empire, this is pretty outmoded. This looks pretty bad. As far as, you know, the events of October 7, what are the events of October 7? What really did happen? And it seems to me it's very possible that there was complicity between Netanyahu and Hamas in constructing 9/11 to give justification for this war of annihilation. It also gives justification and prominence to the Hamas objective of putting this issue in a larger international framework. Both sides are sort of getting a try at their agenda. But I don't see, you know, as much as we want to appreciate the military prowess of Hamas and the bravery and determination that they have demonstrated, that this, I don't see anything to say that this collaboration between Netanyahu and Hamas is not continuing to this day. And the fact that, you know, it's not, you know, they must know in Israel, people must be aware of this. The fact that is, you know, the Israeli population has come up with this interpretation of 10/7, which puts all the blame on Hamas and doesn't deal with the fact that it seems to be an inside job. It seems to be a concocted event, like 9/11 was a concocted event to justify a war on a Muslim constituency.
Okay. Well, Christopher, I mean, with what Anthony is saying, there are analysts that saying that basically, actually, the Israeli regime has come out with this theory to actually lessen the reality that the resistance have been able to be this effective, and what we're seeing now, almost 3 months going into this. But I want to look at, in general, with this situation with the Israeli regime and continuing this genocide, it is not only the physical genocide, but we see on a daily basis its so-called leaders basically openly and adamantly supporting genocide unapologetically. We have, you had talked about the Israeli finance minister, and basically he said that what needs to happen is immigration from Gaza, where there are 100 or 200,000 Arabs, not 2 million. I mean, have you ever seen in the middle of some type of onslaught, but the leaders being so unapologetic to what they're doing? And how does this happen? I mean, as far as reaction, we're not getting a whole lot of reaction. And just imagine if the tables were turned.
I think, of course, that the elephant in the room, as they say, is the fact that the Zionist regime is a nuclear state. And that's the only reason why it's able to get away with these crimes, because it has nuclear weapons, which were provided for by the United States at the height of the Cold War. And they allow the Zionist regime to maintain its control and foothold. As Anthony rightly stated, it is an outpost of European colonialism and imperialism in the region. It serves as a forward operating base for U.S. interests. And so, of course, with that, it is given that cover and sanctioning by Washington, by Brussels, even now by Berlin, to do what it needs to do to continue to project power and to continue to subjugate the Palestinians. And to that there was never any opportunity for a two-state solution. All of these are lies. They always had a greater plan. As Anthony rightly pointed out, this Eretz Israel project, this idea of the greater Israel, has been at the forefront of Likud since the beginning. And so there's no dialogue or compromise with a state that has as its objective the annihilation of another people, whose land that they took and they displaced and they ethnically cleansed. And so I think it's very important to understand here that Israel is able to get away with this, with no recourse. I mean, now South Africa has brought genocide charges at the ICJ. But of course, who's going to enforce that? Ultimately, laws only function by enforcement. If there's no power to enforce it, then these states act as rogue nations and are able to get away with it, like the United States does. The United States has never taken account for its crimes in Iraq, in Libya, in Syria, in Afghanistan, anywhere. And so, of course, it's important to recognize that Israel, too, will not be held to account so long as Washington provides cover. And that's why the movement in the United States for Palestinian liberation is so critical, because that's the way that we can bring Israel in front of an international tribunal. But until then, Israel and the Zionist regime will continue their objectives, no matter what the consequences might be, because ultimately they hold the nuclear power.
Well, Anthony, besides the onslaught on Gaza, the West Bank, of course, is the scene of daily Israeli crimes, and last year was the deadliest, with over 500 Palestinians being killed in the West Bank, 319 since October 7th, 4,900 arrested since then. There's no Hamas there, which is, of course, the Israeli regime's excuse. What does this mean? Your thoughts about exactly what's going on when we look at the occupied territories in the West Bank.
Yes, it is an excuse for Israel, Hamas. And it is public that now the government of Israel is asking Egypt and Turkey and Yemen and Iraq and places like Canada. They're seeking a place to deport the survivors of this mass murder, of this genocide taking place. And speaking of this genocide, I disagree with my colleague in that if the ICJ came up with a ruling that Israel has committed genocide, has violated the Genocide Convention, that changes everything. And then there is the question of complicity of genocide, which is also a crime. And yes, we may not be able to go right up to Netanyahu's door and pull him out and right away, but it changes everything. We see all these procedures to charge people, but the upper echelon of power never gets convicted, never gets charged. These processes never come to anything. So this is serious, and
But at the end of the day, Anthony, sorry to interrupt you because we're limited in time. At the end of the day, the ICJ is under the United Nations, right? And at the end of the day, the United Nations goes back to the veto-wielding country. So then there's that catch-22 in all of it, correct?
No, I mean, it's not a court. There's a Security Council, but this is a court. This is an independent court, and there's the International Criminal Court, which is a fake court, which is a fraud court, which is a court of people who are bought off and paid for. It's a corrupt court.
But the International Court of Justice
is a little different.
But the International Court of Justice is under the United Nations. It's the main judicial organ of the UN, correct?
The United Nations, where else would it be right now? I mean, how many games are in town? But this genocide issue, which goes back to 1948, and, when Netanyahu was born and the Nakba begins in 1948.
Right.
If we could get this through, believe me, that would be major development.
We definitely hope so, Anthony. We definitely hope so. Sorry to cut you off. I'm just about out of time.
Okay.
But Christopher, going into now 2024, we've talked about a few different issues, and we looked at the Yemeni roles in this, and the announcement that we have today is actually that Iran now has sent a destroyer to the Red Sea. Your prognosis, where do you see all of this going?
I see, a heightening and a sharpening of these contradictions and, of course, a heightening of tensions. The main role, for the United States in the region is to project power. Ultimately, that comes into conflict with other regional powers who want to, protect the security and stability of the region and of the people there. So Iran now has taken the lead, carrying the banner of the people and saying that we will not tolerate these Western imperialists to come here and to kill our people and to kill our brothers and sisters in Gaza or in the West Bank or in southern Lebanon or the Golan Heights. And of course, now Iran has every right under international law to send a destroyer into international waters and to protect the shipping lanes that it also uses. And so, of course, the fear is that this conflict is going to spread to other parts. Of course, it's not just confined to Gaza or to the West Bank now. It is actively ongoing in southern Lebanon. Now, of course, in the Red Sea and the Bab al-Mandab Strait. And so, of course, the fear for 2024 is that the United States and the Zionist regime will use every excuse possible to escalate this. And, of course, they're actively bombing Syria. I mean, this is an active conflict right now in multiple countries. We have to be aware that a spreading of this conflict is a dangerous escalation. But, of course, the people will resist. They will resist imperialism at whatever cost, because it is ultimately their freedom from oppression and their liberation that is at stake.
And on that note, so sorry to interrupt you. We're out of time. Appreciate both of you being with me. Anthony Hall, professor of globalization, Lethbridge University. Christopher Halali, researcher and political analyst out of Vermont. And we appreciate you being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the verses of chapter Nur, the 24th chapter of the Holy Quran, and different commentary points of these verses. Dear listeners, let's listen to the 59th verse of chapter Nur.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم وإذا بلغ الأطفال منكم الحلم فليستأذنوا كما استأذن الذين من قبلهم كذلك يبين الله لكم آياته.
And when the children among you reach puberty, let them ask permission at all times, as those before them have done. Thus does Allah make clear to you His verses, and Allah is knowing and wise.
So, as you were previously with us, dear listeners, after explaining these two verses, 58th and 59th one, which were about the children and those of children who have reached puberty and those who haven't, and how they should have their actions in their houses regarding their parents and their private areas, how they should act and how responsible their parents are, their faithful parents are regarding their children. We talked about these issues sufficiently, and we were discussing
Some details about the philosophy of taking permission. We said that we must have a package from intellectual teachings as well as ethical understandings and sentimental rules to those punishments. And it is only at this time that we can understand and we can expect, actually, that our teachings will be of good, beneficial use. So, no subtle thing about chastity is ignored in Islam. Servants must take permission when they want to enter a room in which wife and husband are. And children also the same. Those mature children must take permission anytime. And immature ones even, that they are so mixed in their lives with their parents, have to ask for permission 3 times. This is a kind of Islamic politeness, which is unfortunately observed less today. Though the Holy Quran has mentioned it explicitly in this holy verse, we see that this Islamic ordinance, its philosophy, is less discussed in lectures and writings, and it is not clear that why this decisive ordinance of the Holy Quran is most of the time ignored. Although the verse apparently obligates people to observe this ordinance, even if we suppose that this ordinance is recommended, it is not obligatory, it must be talked about. Its details must be discussed. But what we see is absolute ignorance nowadays regarding these ordinances. على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا. We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
Contrary to what some simple-minded individuals who think the children do make nothing of these issues and servants do not pay attention to them, it is proven that children, let alone adults, are extraordinarily sensitive to this matter. Sometimes parents' carelessness and children looking at scenes that they must not see are the source of ethical deviations. We have seen that these scenes being seen by the children will be the source of some even physical maladies. We have experimented the individuals who themselves confessed that at the result of carelessness of their parents to this matter, and that they observed them busy having this affair with each other, sexual intercourse. I mean, those individuals have reached such a stage of stimulation and physical complex that they felt the enmity of their parents in them. They were nigh to kill them, and perhaps, or perhaps nigh to commit self-murder. It is here that the value and magnificence of this Islamic ordinance appears that the issue and matter that scientists have found today, Islam has foretold in many years ago, centuries ago. It is also necessary to recommend parents to take these matters earnest, to make their children accustomed to taking permission of interests. They must also avoid actions such as sleeping together in a room where discerning children are, which may excite children as much as possible. You know, and you must know, that these affairs have got extraordinarily educational effect on the children's fate. It is interesting that there is a tradition from the Holy Prophet of Islam, sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, who says, "Be careful that you do not have sexual intercourse while a child is looking at you from cradle." Thank you for staying with us, brothers and sisters. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
Take pieces of bread from me, and your soul will never be broken. And if I am your haven, you will never be homeless. One whose cloak is me will never be naked. And one whose resort is me will never be destitute. God is above all powers. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
In a poignant display of solidarity, Christians residing in Pakistan have opted to hold traditional Christmas celebrations with simplicity due to Israel's ongoing onslaught in Gaza. Their decision is a symbolic gesture of empathy and concern for relentless challenges faced by the people of Gaza during this festive season.
The message of Jesus Christ was the message of peace and security. We desire peace in Palestine. On this Christmas, our hearts are heavy, and we feel compelled to express our brothers and sisters in Gaza.
Pastors from various Christian communities across Pakistan gathered in the capital city Islamabad on Sunday for a special joint prayer meeting to appeal for a ceasefire in Gaza.
In the spirit of Christmas, we gather here to raise our voices in prayer for the innocent lives affected by the conflict in Gaza. Our prayers are with the people of Palestine, and we stand united in our plea for a ceasefire and lasting peace.
Meanwhile, a diverse gathering of people also expressed solidarity with the oppressed people of Gaza through the display of vibrant balloons, each carefully adorned with messages of solidarity and support.
The situation of Gaza is extremely distressing. It is genocide, it is violence, and it is extreme power play in a region that does not deserve this at all.
Ceasefire now!
Demanding an immediate ceasefire, the individuals of all ages called on the world to halt the ongoing genocide of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip.
Christians in Pakistan are using this Christmas to advocate for peace in Gaza rather than engaging in traditional celebrations. The gesture underscores that humanity is not confined by religious or national boundaries, but it is all about showing compassion for the people in distress. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
For the 11th weekend in a row since the start of Israel's most brutal war on Gaza, rallies were held in Sydney and Melbourne in support of Palestinians. In Sydney, thousands of people gathered once again in Central Business District's Hyde Park for a rally dubbed Stop the Genocide in Gaza, called by the Palestine Action Group, an activist formation committed to supporting Palestine and opposing Israel apartheid. A number of other groups also joined the rally, calling on Western governments to finally put some pressure on Israel for its ongoing violence, genocide and oppression against Palestinians.
And the Australian government continues to be a firm backer of Israel, to their great shame. So clearly, again, 11 weeks of massive protests, the likes of which we've never seen before, is having an impact, and they're feeling the pressure, so they're shifting their rhetoric a bit.
The rally, attended by school union representatives, was also joined by a group of outraged Sydney-based Jews who hold anti-Zionist views.
So-called posture of the Western countries and so-called international law is, in my opinion, just pointless, and it's appalling, but quite frankly. We've got a genocide happening right in front of us.
Some of the speakers acknowledged that Palestinians are experiencing the same struggle as the indigenous people in Australia. Many hundreds of thousands of Aboriginals have been killed or forcibly removed from their land and their families at the hands of colonial authorities over the past 200 years.
People at the Sydney rally praised South Africa for filing a case against Israel at the International Court of Justice, accusing Tel Aviv of committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. More than 21,500 civilians have been killed by the Israeli army so far, including nearly 9,000 children and 6,500 women.
I mean, it is genocide. They should go to the International Criminal Court because they are committing war crimes. War crimes many, many times over. I mean, it's obvious, you know, this is the obvious to ordinary people that this is a massive ongoing war crime.
Also on Saturday, a rally in solidarity with the Gazans was held at Melbourne's State Library for the 11th week in a row. Max Civili, Sydney.
In response to the call of the Free Palestine movement, massive crowds gathered in the Yarmouk refugee camp near Damascus to show their confidence in the strength and determination of the resistance in Gaza, confirming that the Al-Aqsa Flood operation is a fateful battle that ignited hope in their hearts, as it brings them closer to the defeat of the Israeli occupation and their return to their homeland.
We are here to support people in the Gaza Strip and voice our unconditional support to the resistance groups. After nearly 3 months of fighting, it's clear that the Zionist regime is facing defeat. The Al-Aqsa Flood operation revealed that Israel's collapse is imminent.
The Israeli occupation politically has nothing now
Military has nothing now, security has nothing, economy has nothing, and we also tell the world that October 7th is the gate for the liberation of the whole Palestine, from the river to the sea.
Participants confirmed that the excess of resistance embraces the Palestinian struggle and supports all resistance factions, including the Al-Qassam Brigades and Al-Quds Brigades. They expressed their anger at the Israeli atrocities against the people of Gaza, emphasizing their adherence to their right of return and liberating Al-Quds.
Syrians and Palestinians have shown their absolute faith in the victory of the Resistance Front and Al-Aqsa Front operation, not only as a path to liberate the occupied lands, but also as inspiration for the generations to come. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Thousands took to the streets of Austria's capital Vienna to express solidarity with Gaza on Saturday. These demonstrations were special in the sense that they were the first street protests after a court ruling removing some restrictions on acts of solidarity with Palestine. Since October 7, police and government have been imposing strict sanctions on protests and even banned expressions of solidarity with Gaza entirely. Following a demonstration on November 5 in the city of Salzburg, charges were filed against participants who held signs showing Palestine in its pre-1947 borders. Police argued the banner constitute a criminal offense due to incitement to hatred for denying the Israeli regime's right to exist. The tide has now turned. The court dropped the charges a few days ago, arguing they violated freedom of expression. It ruled that it is lawful to carry signs showing maps of Palestine at demonstrations. The ruling comes only days after similar verdicts in Germany, where courts in Cologne and Munster ruled that the slogans "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," "Child murderer Israel," and "Stop the genocide in Gaza" can be freely expressed in the country. German police have previously used these slogans to prohibit protests for Gaza, creating worries that the free speech is under threat.
I'm here because I feel a duty to stand against the destruction of life, the environment, and dignity, because this destruction is being done in my name. And instead of making me safer, it's making it more dangerous for me to live in the diaspora.
While their governments stand staunchly on the side of the Zionist regime of Israel, thousands of people in Austria and Germany keep marching for Palestine. Experts say these demonstrations have placed some real pressure on European governments, pushing them to distance themselves from Israeli atrocities.
The court rulings are a welcome boost for the Palestine solidarity movement in Europe, where concerns are growing over a crackdown on Palestine supporters. Following recent court decisions, police believe the coming year will see more and more demonstrations for Gaza. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
Iraq is marking the fourth anniversary of the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. During an event attended by high-ranking Iraqi and Iranian officials, the two commanders were prized as a role model for all generations.
Today we stand alongside our Iranian brothers to remember our leaders General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, whose memories are engraved in our minds. And although they are gone physically, their thoughts are still with us.
Former Iraqi Prime Minister Nour al-Maliki admired the two leaders and their role in the fight against terrorism in the region. The chief of Iraq Popular Mobilization Units, Faleh al-Fayyad, also addressed the ceremony. He said the role of General Qasem Soleimani and his companion was essential in standing against Daesh. Several Iraqi lawmakers were also present at the event. They said the two commanders' determination to fight against terrorists, irritated their backers.
Today we remember the pure souls that fought against terror and defeated something that made terror supporters mad. That's why they committed such a cowardly act of killing our leaders in Iraq.
They expect that by assassinating our leaders, they will weaken our resistance, but they have failed to achieve their goals, and even after committing their cowardly act, it did nothing more than adding strength to us.
The attendees also condemned the latest attacks on anti-terror forces in Iraq and Syria, which led to the martyrdom of Sayed Razi Mousawi. They demanded an immediate end to the U.S. military presence in Iraq, and they argued that this is the only solution to stop the continuous attacks on Iraqi forces and end violations against Iraq's sovereignty. They also expressed their solidarity with the Palestinians and condemned the Israeli war on Gaza. A huge crowd have gathered today to commemorate the fourth anniversary of the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Al-Haj Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. The legacy of the anti-terror icons continue to live on, inspiring people in the region to stand up for the oppressed. Muslim Salim, Baghdad.
The journalists have found themselves stalked by the indiscriminate Israeli strikes, which so far have claimed the lives of over 100 journalists working for different media agencies across the globe. Journalists believe the regime is deliberately attacking them and that they are paying the price of covering the Israeli massacres and atrocities committed day and night in Gaza and putting on display the really brutal face of the Israeli occupation. This undoubtedly has limited the chance of the Israeli propaganda machine to whitewash the murder of Palestinian children and deceive people outside the occupied territories on what is really going on.
The Israeli occupation is still practicing this genocide against the Palestinian people generally and the journalists particularly. Till this moment, the Israeli army has deliberately killed 105 journalists who were doing their job of covering the Israeli crimes. And the reason behind that is to curb the coverage of Israeli crimes. In addition to that, it destroyed 96 media agencies in Gaza.
The sufferings of the Palestinian journalists in Gaza are not limited to the Israeli attacks. They are also grappling with the disastrous humanitarian conditions they are experiencing along with their families. Many of them lost their houses to constant Israeli bombardments and joined the displaced people in Gaza, who are estimated to comprise over 80% of the region's population. All they have now are small tents created of pieces of plastic, wood, and fabric, or at best, classes in the normal schools, which are supposed to be safe, but have been repeatedly targeted by Israel.
We, the Palestinian journalists, consider ourselves standing on the same front beside the resistance members on the battlefield. Our battle is to show the world the reality of Israeli massacres despite the ongoing crimes against journalists and the catastrophic humanitarian conditions in Gaza. As you see, I live here in this press van. It's really hard to fulfill your basic needs even when it comes to going to the bathroom. My family fled to the schools and they faced the same hardships.
Journalists in Gaza have to deal with many problems when trying to prepare a simple report on the situation in the Strip. Many cannot even find a chair or a desk, and hence they cannot perform journalistic tasks smoothly, making matters worse. Most of the time there is no internet in the Strip, and journalists cannot communicate with the world.
As a Palestinian journalist, similar to all my colleagues, we live in a very complicated situation. Even though we are chased by the Israeli strikes and killings, we find ourselves obliged to forget about the difficulties we face in every aspect of life due to this onslaught for the sake of reporting the truth. I assure you that every single one of the 2.3 million Palestinians here has his or her tragedy, and this includes us. Our daily life is horrific and unimaginable at all levels.
Like all the other Gazans, many Palestinian journalists in the besieged district have been killed brutally by the Israeli bombardments. And those who are still alive continue to suffer from the unlivable conditions in the region. Mutia Abu Msabih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
لا
Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has slammed Israel's assassination of senior Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps advisor Sayyid Radi Mousawi in Syria. Hezbollah called it a flagrant and brazen attack and a transgression of borders. Deputy head of Hezbollah's executive council told Press TV that General Qasem Soleimani had predicted that Sayyid Razi would be assassinated in the battle to liberate al-Quds.
His martyrdom was only a matter of time. He was a man who had spent his youth on sacrifice. He was always ready to offer whatever assistance was needed to the resistance groups. This assassination will not stop the path which Sayyid Radi al-Mousawi has opened for us. It will not stop us and other resistance groups in the region from continuing to walk in this path. We will remain on the battlefield to face this enemy which is occupying and looting our land. And with the blessing of the martyrs, the future will witness a new victory for the resistance in Gaza and the region.
Palestinian resistance factions Hamas and Islamic Jihad also said in a statement that the assassination of Brigadier General Radi Mousawi on Syrian territory is a crime and a cowardly act that threatens security and stability in the region. The Palestinian resistance groups lauded Sayyid Radi for his role in supporting the resistance in Palestine.
We know that he was very close to General Qasem Soleimani and therefore worked closely with the Palestinian resistance groups and all resistance groups in the region. His efforts were based on the same school of thought as General Soleimani, and he walked in the same path which they had opened together. Today, we can see the result of these efforts in Gaza and the West Bank.
The Iranian cultural advisor in Beirut said General Mousawi was considered as a man who devoted his life to the Palestinian cause and finally sacrificed it for the sake of al-Quds.
Sayyid Radi Mousawi, God bless his soul, was one of the great leaders in the IRGC who devoted his life to support the honorable resistance in the region, especially in Lebanon and Palestine. Therefore, he is a part of every blessed bullet or rocket that is being fired to target the criminal Zionist regime, whether in Palestine or Lebanon.
Sayyid Radi is now seen as a regional leader and martyr, just as General Soleimani. He is regarded by many as a martyr in the long battle for the liberation of al-Quds. On the martyrdom anniversary of General Qasem Soleimani, the resistance front has bid farewell to another leader. Sayyid Radi Mousawi's role in supporting the resistance groups of Lebanon and Palestine was significant. However, for the resistance, martyrdom is another form of divine victory. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has vowed to take tough revenge on Israel for assassinating a senior Iranian military advisor in Syria. IRGC spokesman Ramazan Sharif made this statement during a press conference held in the Iranian capital, Tehran. He blasted the Monday Israeli missile attack on Damascus that targeted Brigadier General Sayyid Razi Mousavi's residence in the Sayyid Zainab neighborhood. He also described the assassination as a continuation of Israel's violation of international laws, calling on the international community to stop the crimes of the occupying regime, which endanger international peace and security. When asked about Tel Aviv's motive for committing this heinous crime, Sharif said the regime is seeking to expand its genocidal onslaught on Gaza to the entire West Asia region.
One of the reasons is that the Israeli regime wants to extend the scope of the war beyond the borders of Palestine, and they want to deflect public attention from the Gaza war. The second point, which is important, is that the Israelis try to show off their aerial dominance. Maybe these are the two main reasons because of which the assassination was committed.
The IRGC spokesman warned that Israel must wait for a direct or indirect response as Iran reserves the right to counter the Israeli assassination. He added, the martyrdom of the Iranian commander will usher in a new era where the Zionist regime will be the loser. Sharif also touched upon the U.S. support for Israel, saying Washington is violating international law by funding and backing the regime's crimes in Gaza.
Definitely one of their strategies has been to change the Israel-Palestine conflict to Iran-America conflict. But as the wise leader of the Islamic Revolution said on the first day of the Al-Aqsa flood operation, this operation was launched by Palestinians against Israelis, and the U.S. support for Israel is the reason why the regime continues to exist.
Brigadier General Sayed Razi Mousavi was martyred by Israel while on an advisory mission in Syria.
Truth never dies, and today it's livelier than ever as the world is observing the Israeli crimes with open eyes, conscious minds, and bleeding hearts. No matter what the Israeli regime and its supporters do to divert the global community's attention from its aggression on Gaza, the whole world are unanimously calling for justice for Palestinians. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
اون چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند ذکر خداست، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of Truth.